Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This week, the Bookshelf Cinema is screening the second best exotic Marigold Hotel, 5-7, Danny Collins, and more. This week at the E-Bar, author Andrew Nathan Hood launches his new book, Jim Guthrie, Who Needs What, at 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday, April 29th. And on Friday, May 1st, The Wooden Sky and Sky Wallace will blast you up into the sky for an E-Bar show. The Bookshelf is an independently owned cultural hub located at 41 Quebec Street in Guelph. For more information about their hours, listings, blogs, and accessibility, please visit bookshelf.ca.
Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
Hey, I'm back from St. John's, Newfoundland, where I was attending the Lanya Vanya Music and Arts Festival. I had an amazing time. Thanks to everyone who made that possible, and my hosts, Judd and Krista, and my housemates for the 4 or 5 days I was there, Matthias Kahm and Ariel Charette. That was really fun. Had a great time. Very late nights. They start their shows there in St. John's, or at least at Lanya Vanya, quite late, I think. And that's fine. I mean, just late, and on, like, you know, a band will go on, the first of three bands will go on at like 11. You don't get home till like 3 or 4 in the morning. It's, when you have a dad alarm clock, it screws you up a little bit. I'm still trying to catch up on sleep, and in fact, let me just wrap this up very quickly so I can go to bed. What was I going to say there? Oh, I was going to say that I did a long night episode, Long Night with Vish Khanna, my talk show that I do sometimes. Did one in St. John's. I think you'll be hearing it soon. Just working out some audio details on it, but I think you're going to hear it. Felt like a nice one. You know, the tape, sometimes the tape doesn't feel as good as you think. You know, it doesn't, it's not quite the thing you want it to be, but it's there. It was fun. I had a good time. I'm going to listen to it and figure out some stuff. So you'll hear that, and they're great guests and all that. On a recent episode of Long Night with Vish Khanna, my guest was Scott Thompson of the Kids in the Hall, and he stole the show. A few weeks later, I caught up with Scott again. This time it was on the phone, and he answered the Exclaim magazine questionnaire. These are 23 set questions, a little bit of a biographical intro at the top, and he did an amazing job answering this thing. It's available now. You can read it if you like at exclaim.ca, but you can hear it now as well. So this is myself and Scott. He's going through the questions. I tell you, a couple of his responses may have slightly changed my way of thinking about a whole bunch of things. And I didn't expect that doing this questionnaire. I've done this questionnaire with a lot of people. I've learned some things, but he may have altered my life a little bit. And Scott Thompson has kind of altered my life in lots of ways. Larry Sanders Show, Kids in the Hall. He's an unbelievable man, and he's very smart. He's very kind. And you'll hear that, and very, very, very funny. You'll hear that as he answers these questions. So here it is, myself, Scott Thompson of the Kids in the Hall. Go see Kids in the Hall. They're on tour across North America right now, and they are the best. So there, me, Scott Thompson, enjoy.
The
The 32nd Annual Hillside Festival takes place July 24th, 25th, and 26th at Guelph Lake, rain or shine, featuring performances by Astral Swans, Bad Bad Not Good, Badminton Racket, Baskery, Battle of Santiago, Braids, The Brothers Landreth, Bulgarian Voices Trio, By Divine Right, Tim Chasen, Nels Klein Singers, Constantines, Nick Crane, Alex Cuba, Daka Braka, Del Bell, Daldrums, Echo Deck, Darren Edens, Eloquent, Etiquette, Nick Ferrio, Jeremy Fisher, Frazee Ford, David Francie, The Good Lovelies, Great Lakes Swimmers, Ash Grunwald, Hungai, The Henrys, Suzanne Jarvie, Mo Kenny, The Cramdens, Daniel Lanois, Last X, Lee Reed, Lids, Look Vibrant, Leluc, Minotaurs, Moonface, The Once, Nancy Pants, Doug Paisley, Fred Penner, Perch Creek, Poor Man's Whiskey, Natalie Prass, The Spring Standard, Jamie Stone's Lomax Project, Sultans of String, Team, Thus Owls, Tribecistan, Riley Walker, The Weather Station, Jason Wilson and Pee Wee Ellis, and more to be announced. For more information about purchasing tickets to this accessible event, please visit hillsidefestival.ca.
All right, Scott, we're going to begin with the first thing, which is kind of a jumble of things.
Okay.
I'll ask them to you individually. Before we begin, please state your full name.
My full name is John Scott Thompson.
Your hometown?
Brampton, Ontario.
That's right, that's right. And your current headquarters?
Toronto, Ontario.
I feel like we're at the border here.
Mm-hmm.
And any of your upcoming activities, especially Canadian tour dates and new releases? What do you want to plug right now, Scott?
Oh, the Kids in the Hall tour. Yeah, that's basically what I want to... we start the tour, I think, the 24th in Toronto. We finish June 6th in Denver. I think it's like 32 cities. It's a big tour.
And you and I talked about this recently. You say there's going to be classics, but also new material?
Yep, yep. Yeah, a year ago we did a show at the Elizabeth Bader and we did all new material for a week and we workshopped a lot of stuff. So we're using some of that material and some material from some other tours we've done and some classics from television.
Now,
so yeah, it's a mix of everything.
How does the process of writing new material now, because you kind of are geographically separated, I think, right?
Well, yeah. We're basically in two cities, Toronto and Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Kevin's in Winnipeg, but, you know, he's all over the place. He's constantly traveling. So it's really three cities, you know, the three big ones, Toronto, Los Angeles, and Winnipeg,
so,
right? You know, the showbiz triangle, they call it. And you know, it's definitely different. You know, when we were younger and we were working together, we were always together. So, you know, when you're young, all you do is hang out.
Mm-hmm.
And hanging out quite often leads to writing. So now we have to plan it more. We'll exchange ideas online and then maybe someone will write a version, the other person will do something.
Mm-hmm.
But then this last one, you know, it's basically up to you. And Mark and I worked together a lot on this writing process together because we're both in Toronto.
Right.
So he'd come over here and we would spritz stuff and then put it together. You know, like the one piece Foodies, that's a big new sketch of ours. I mean, I shepherded it, but everyone's involved. I mean, that's the whole thing with us. No one can really claim authorship, really, of anything. Because even if you think it's all yours, there's something of someone in the group in there. There's no question, always.
Okay, so it's you and Mark here, by the time it hits the stage, everyone's probably had a little finger on it?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Even a monologue is like that.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you look at everybody's monologues, you'll still, pretty much everything, there'll be a joke or a line or an idea, a way of doing something that came from someone else. That's the beauty about being in a group is that, you know, you're not on all the time. But when you have five people, there's always someone on.
Yeah.
Now, you know?
Yeah, you mentioned Foodies. Is there...
Foodies, it's about the waiters. And it's the... I don't know if you saw the show a year ago, but it's a sketch where a high-end restaurant and a woman in the restaurant calls a mousse a pudding. And it causes chaos with the wait staff. They just don't know what to do. They eventually have to torch the place. So it's basically, yeah, it's basically satirizing the whole food, the preciousness of food today.
Yeah, yeah. Now, are there other sketches that things that have recurred that you guys have written more recently since you really, I want to ask about this too, but in recent years, are there other things you can kind of describe for us if we haven't seen the show yet?
Yeah, like there's a scene with Kevin and Dave where Dave comes over to talk to Kevin about his breakup with his imaginary girlfriend. That's pretty good. There's the opening of our show, which is us in Five Men in Wedding Dresses. That's all new.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin's song about the history of the kids in the hall. We were going to do the new Fran and Gordon piece, but we're going to do we're doing Salty Ham, the original.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But you know what else? I mean, we're doing a thing. We haven't written it yet, but we're working on it. We're going to hopefully end the show with a mashup kind of a thing where it's basically Crushing Your Head guy, Mr. Tizek, that's mm-hmm. his name,
mm-hmm.
meets other characters and crushes them.
Oh, okay.
We were thinking of it a way as maybe kind of like disposing of characters, like going, this one's done, and crushing them.
Do you mean for good or just in the nature?
Well, I want to do it for good. I don't think the others will, but I mean, there's certain characters of mine that I go, I'm never going to do this again. Can't we just kill them?
Right.
So, but there's been a lot of discussion about that.
Okay, that's...
So, I don't know how it's going to... The other thing is, it could be a mashup of Running Faggot and Head Crusher, if you can imagine. So, we're trying to figure it out.
That's great.
Yeah. I know, I just think that as soon as Running Faggot escapes the people that are trying to kill him, I think he might be crushed by the Head Crusher. It could be funny, we'll see.
This is what I wanted to touch upon. I think that every time you guys do a tour, there's a notion that you're back.
Yeah, every time. People are like, what's it like to be with the boys again? This must be so amazing. As if we haven't seen each other in 20 years. And every time it's like people think it's a comeback or we got the gang together again. It couldn't be further from the truth. We're always talking.
Yeah.
I mean, if not, there's always... two in the group or three in the group that's always doing something ever since, we had that period after Brain Candy when we all kind of lost, I guess. Yeah, that's the good word to put it. That's a good way to put it. We lost it. Lost the thread. At least I sure did. But since that 5-year period where none of us spoke to each other, we've been together. I mean, certainly we all have our own careers, and there'll be long periods where we don't see each other, but there'll be like an email or a group call or something. And we made that decision, when we got back together the second time, and when 2000, when we really did come back together,
right.
We kind of made a decision that this is it. We're here for life. You don't get out.
Right. Okay. So if you broke up, there was a 5-year period where you might have been
5 years. Yeah.
You might've been broken up for real.
Yeah. And we were broken up from 95 to 2000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but for now, since 2000, it's ridiculous to say that you're coming back every time you're doing a tour. You're just doing a tour.
We're just doing a tour.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. We're just doing a tour.
Okay. All right. And, okay. I think that covers the interview aspects. I think we're going to get to the questioner. I will say thanks again for giving me a copy of your book.
Oh, good.
I read the book I think I did it over two nights, if I recall correctly. It was great. And do you have any up? So this was book one?
Yes, book one. I mean, it cost me money to put that book out. That's the truth. But it's a labor of love. And I've been working on that story for a long time. It's this big story in my head that I have to get out. And it's conceived as a trilogy. And basically, I'm waiting for someone to... I did a Kickstarter a year ago, uh-huh. to try to raise some money to do the second book, but I didn't get enough money. And because, I'll write it for free. I mean, I've already almost finished the second book. But I can't my artists can't work for free.
Right.
Like, they have to be paid.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't have a company that's going to put out a second book. So I'm ready to go, but I have to have someone that would invest in it. But what I'm trying to do right now is I'm working with a company that is interested in turning it into an animated series.
Right.
Which is basically Danny Husk as a sex slave at the center of the earth.
Well, this is how you framed it to me when you handed me the book.
Yeah.
I read the first one, and that's
because you only get to the end of the first book.
All right. Well, I was all excited about reading the sex stuff, and then there wasn't that much.
No, there isn't.
Or any.
No. there's none for Danny.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, none for Danny. Part of the first book is basically about Danny. I basically turn him into a eunuch so that when his sex does come back, it's like when you don't masturbate for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You come like a rocket.
Right.
And it's that sort of thing. So Danny's like this kind of, if it was a TV series, it would be much more funny. First of all,
right.
It wouldn't be as much, because you know, I wrote this as a science fiction kid, like fantasy and storytelling. I mean, narrative. I mean, it's a story. But if I did a series, it would be much more comic and a little more episodic, and it would be much more about Danny's sexual adventures, because that was the original idea. Was I just thought, how do you take a character like Danny and strip everything away, take away everything from him, and then throw him into, you know, basically I wanted to kind of metaphorically kill him and then bring him back slowly.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
And I knew that he was the kind of a character that he's an everyman, and I knew that I could do anything with him. And he's so far from me, and also I created that whole, I decided to start writing The Hollow Planet at a period in my life, which is, well, most of my career, up until very, very recently, where all I ever did was play these dumb gay characters. Not that they were dumb, neutered gay characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I got so sick of it, because I still believe that people weren't looking at me as a comedian or an actor of any kind, just as, oh, he's the gay guy, we'll hire him for the gay part.
Right.
Oh, let's hire the gay guy. And it really got very distressing. So I thought, I'm going to take Danny Husk, there couldn't be anyone less gay, and write a story for him. And basically, it was started as I wanted to create a property, you know, like for myself. And then I just got caught up in the story. And, it was originally written as a screenplay. And I took it to every studio. I did it. People would say, oh, we love it. We've never read anything like that. It's the most original thing we've ever read, which is Hollywood code for, you'll never get this thing made. I mean, that really is the kiss of death. And they don't want original unless, you know, someone makes a mistake, and then later they say, oh, I knew what I was doing. But, I have to write this story. That's basically it. I have to.
Okay.
The characters are in my head. I have to get them out. And eventually, if no one gives me some money for the second book, I'll publish it on my own.
Okay.
But the dream is that it can become an animated series.
Yeah, no, it seems like it's all there. I found that.
Kind of like an Archer kind of a story.
Yeah,
thing.
Totally. Yeah,
that's, yeah. And what's interesting is that I started creating the story in my head a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
15 years ago at least. And at the time, you know, and when you really think about, you know, 15 years later, basically what the book's about, it's about the fall of the straight white male. And, 15, 20 years ago, that was just glimmering on the horizon. Now we're in full, it's going full bore.
Yeah.
I mean, straight white men are plummeting. I mean, it's like, you know, when you leave the house in the morning, you should be looking up, because they're dropping like flies. Mad Men really is kind of like, it's a dramatic look at the fall of the straight white male.
Yeah.
And so that's how I pitched the Danny thing now, is it's a comic look at the fall of the straight white male and from his position of power and hitting rock bottom and then being recreated. And it's about the new fluidity of masculinity, you know, and the new fluidity of just gender and orientation. Straight men, especially, you know, even with of any color, are becoming more... Well, they're being more open about their sexuality.
Right.
Which I think is very... Danny Husky I love because he's straight, but he's fluid. Like, he's not rigid at all sexually. Mm-hmm. And he's willing to try things. So he becomes the sex slave of the prince.
Right.
So it's all about race and sex. And I mean, the prince in many ways, the mulatto prince, he's kind of a weird Obama mirror image.
In
a way, he's the evil.
Right.
The evil mixed race king.
Okay.
But the reason I made the ruling family, I know no one even knows what we're talking about, but I could talk about this all day. But I wanted to basically, my main inspiration was through the looking glass. I wanted a reversal of the way things are seen here. So I made the straight white male, the slave, the ruling family, the black family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I wanted to explore slavery, what I think is really behind slavery, which is sex. The idea that you can have a human being at your beck and call for whatever you want. God, sex must be at the center of it.
That's
money and sex, I guess.
Money,
but for
sex,
me, I don't care
power,
about
yeah.
money. I only care about sex.
Okay. All right.
So, and I wanted to do it without people getting all politically correct and going, you can't do that with a black character.
Right.
Right? But you can do whatever the fuck you want with a straight white guy in a suit.
Straight white guy in a mustache and a suit, yeah. You can now. Yeah.
And so that's why, and that's the beauty of it. Like at the end of this journey, Danny Husk, he's lost everything, but he will come back better than he was before. A better, more well-rounded, stronger man. It's about manhood, really.
Yeah.
I guess it's about my own struggles with manhood. How does a gay man actually be a man? And what is a man? What does that even mean anymore? But I love Danny Husk, and I don't think that, there's a real piling on of straight white men right now,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of punishment from gay people, people of color, women, and I don't think it's fair. I don't like bullying wherever it comes from,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not into this to punish them, and I think there's a lot of punishment going on.
Right, I see your point. I mean, 20 years ago, it would have seemed more punitive. At this point, it's a redemption story.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and straight white guys can't get a break, really, now. They can't say anything.
Right.
They can't say anything. And you can really see it in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, comedy is having a huge moment right now. But the straight white guys are just not going, generally, they're not doing scary material. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. No,
they're afraid to because they're so used, they don't want to be called sexist, racist, homophobic, Islamophobic. I mean, people are so thin-skinned today that it's having a huge effect on comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't know why. I'm just going on and
yeah,
on. But
yeah,
anyway,
no,
sorry.
No, I appreciate that.
I went off base.
No, it's fine. I appreciate knowing more about that world.
White guys.
White guys, yeah. Let's move from this interview section to the fixed questions.
Oh,
now.
Yeah.
Now, the first one kind of relates to what we've been talking about. It's very simply, what are you up to, current projects?
Oh, I'm working on the Husk animation series.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing my podcast. I'm going to do one actually this afternoon. My podcast is called Scott Free Podcast. I'm working on Hannibal. I play Jimmy Price on Hannibal. I'm getting ready for the Kids in the Hall tour. And I'm working on doing a stand-up comedy special in the fall.
Oh, wow, a whole special.
And hopefully, yeah, this summer, after the Kids in the Hall tour is done, then I'll take a break. Then I'm working on doing a stand-up tour. And hopefully in the fall, I'll do a stand-up special. That's my next goal.
Nice.
Big goal.
That's great. All right.
Yeah.
Now, in the realm of music, films, books, art, TV, food, lifestyle, just culture, what are your current fixations, Scott?
Oh, right now, musically, I would say my fixation would be Lana Del Rey.
Hmm.
In books, I'm obsessed with the book I'm reading right now is Selfish Giant. I'm loving it.
What is that book?
It's Kazuo Yashiguro, I think his name is.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote The Remains of the Day,
mm-hmm.
and Never Let Me Go. This book is about an old couple in the past, in like, I don't know, like pre like England in the 14th century, but it's a time when trolls and, like, it actually is a fantastical book. And he doesn't really do fantasy, but he's a really great writer. But it's basically an old couple in England where a mist is taking people's memories away. And this old couple leave their village to visit their son who they've forgotten about. Hmm. And it's their journey, basically, to find him. I'm just loving it. It's just, I mean, I love fantasy, and I love fantasy when it's like literature. Like Game of Thrones, I'm obsessed by Game of Thrones.
Right, right, okay.
The books and the series. I cannot wait for it to come back.
Oh, okay, interesting.
House of Cards, my God, I love that.
Yeah, we just finished the last season, my wife and I.
Isn't that amazing?
It was pretty, yeah, it was. We're still processing.
You don't think so?
No. I'm still processing it. It's a show that I can't decide if I like very much. Like I don't necessarily like the characters.
No, they're horrible.
Right, and then I'm like, why am I watching this over and over again? But this was a very peculiar season, I thought, compared to the
first
one.
It was. Yeah. It's interesting because it's about the best, the most supportive couple on television who are awful.
Yeah.
I mean, but then in season three, they stop being supportive. And boy, is it ugly.
There's a communication breakdown generally. Like in the first two seasons, yeah. Spacey is talking to us constantly.
Constantly.
I noticed in this last season, he barely acknowledges us.
That's very interesting. Because we're, in a way, maybe his conscience. And he's not in touch with that any longer.
Yeah, that's what I think. Like, I think he speaks to us in the third season maybe three times. And, like, it's ridiculous.
My God. Anyway, you're right. I never even noticed that.
It's something I noticed right away. I said it. I'm like, he's not talking to us anymore. What happened?
But what fascinates me about that show is what we were talking about earlier with the new masculinity and the new sexuality. Mm-hmm. Is that character of the president, you wouldn't call that is that a gay character?
He seems to be a bi character.
Bisexual.
Yeah.
I mean, when was the last time you saw a bisexual male? That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Who's the president? I mean, that's amazing. I mean, that's fascinating to me. Bisexuals weren't even supposed to exist. And we all know it's true. Women were allowed to be bisexual, but men were not.
Yeah, yeah.
Men were like, basically, suck one cock, and that's it.
Right.
You are gay for life. But a woman can eat 3 to 5 pussies in her life and still be called straight. Right?
Yes, it's true.
Because I think it's because men fantasize about women together, and women, up until very recently, did not fantasize about men together. And I think young women are fantasizing about men together. And that might be partly what's driving gay liberation, I think.
Oh, interesting.
And certainly the liberation of the bisexual. Because I've been waiting for this one a long time. For men that are more fluid to admit it and go, just tell the truth. Once you don't mind getting your cock sucked by a guy once in a while.
Yeah.
Like, just fucking talk about it.
Right.
Like, it's no big deal. Like, this Kevin Spacey scene when him and his wife sleep with the bodyguard.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Because I'm like, none of those characters, the bodyguard, no one thought of him as being gay. But it's about, and then the guy who's writing the story about him, his fascinating sexuality.
Right.
This is a straight character, but he's what we call in the gay world, trade.
Trade.
Right? Rough trade.
Oh, right.
Straight men that they're straight, but occasionally they'll have sex with a guy, and they like they're men that like to be, you know, they like the excitement of it.
Right.
Sometimes they do it for money. Sometimes they do it just for power. Sometimes they just do it because they like the guy and they throw him a favor. I don't know, but I'm fascinated by it. I'm glad that it's not. We're moving into a less rigid orthodoxy.
Yeah. Yeah, I
and
agree with it.
That's the number one thing that fascinates me about Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, House of Cards.
House of Cards.
It's that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, we have to move on here. Why do you live?
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Why do you live where you do?
Well, in Toronto?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, I live in Toronto. I was living in L.A. up until 5.5 years ago. I came home because I got cancer.
Yeah.
And I never went back. I was living in L.A. and I got sick and I didn't have health care, and so I had to come home. And I intended to go back, but then I ended up taking a lot longer to get better than I thought it would take.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize it would take me a couple of years. And then by then, you know, but then what happened, we had Death Comes to Town right away. Then I got other work, and then I got Hannibal 3 years ago. So I stayed. Now I don't know what to do. I mean, I'm thinking about getting an apartment in LA again, because it's very difficult to build a career here. The problem with Canada is they don't build on success.
Right.
They say, oh, you've had some success. Move away. Let someone else have that. And it's very difficult.
Huh. That's an interesting perspective. Are you, because of your battle with cancer and the fact that you were in LA, are you slightly traumatized by the city in some way? Or
yeah. I'm traumatized by Canadian show business.
Oh, by Canada. No, I meant about by not
going.
LA? Yeah.
Oh, God, no.
No. You want to go back.
You mean do I associate LA with cancer?
Yeah, I thought you were leading us down that path, but no, that's not the case.
No.
No, okay.
No, like you know, like Tom Green's book, Hollywood Gave Me Cancer.
Mm. You don't.
No, I don't think it did.
No, okay. So you're willing.
Drew Barrymore gave him cancer. I don't know why I brought that up. I love Tom's book, and I don't. That is what it's called.
Yeah, I haven't read Tom's book.
Isn't it called Hollywood Gave Me Cancer or Hollywood Causes Cancer?
Something like that. Yeah, that's
something,
right.
Something like bridge burning like that.
Right, and you're not, but you don't feel that way.
No, I don't.
Okay, you would go back if you could.
No, the truth is, I was never really in love with Los Angeles until I had to come home.
Hmm.
And by the time I left, I was starting to really like it. It took me a hell of a long time. And now I look back on it very fondly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I don't blame... No, it didn't give me cancer.
All right. We're clear. The people of Los Angeles know now that you don't think...
No.
Okay.
No. What gave me cancer was a Black Widow spider. That's what gave me cancer.
Was it really? No.
Well, that's what triggered it.
You think like a bite?
I think so.
Oh, is this... is that substantiated in any way?
No.
Okay.
It's one of my... I thought a lot about why I got cancer. I don't come from a cancer family.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hmm. You know, in families, every family has their fault lines.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is heart and stroke on both sides. So I don't really understand why I would get it. I mean, you know, I've been trying to figure it out. What was it that I did that's different than all my brothers and my cousins and my aunts and uncles and mom and dad, you know?
Yeah.
What was it? I don't know. But I do know that I was bit by a black widow, and within a week I had pain in my stomach. Huh. There's lots of, come in, Paul. And there's other things I blame it on, too. I don't think it gave me
cancer.
Okay. I do believe, though, that things are triggered. And that might have been one of the things that triggered it.
Are you okay now?
Yes.
You're fine. Okay.
I beat it. I had lymphoma
right.
in my stomach.
Yeah.
And I am. I'm 5 years clean.
Good for you. That's great.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. All right. Name something you consider a mind-altering work of art. And this can consist of any media, but not your own.
Mind-altering work of art. Any kind of art, right? Anything?
Anything.
What? Oh, that's a good one. Paul Bellini just popped in. Yeah, I'm going to say, that's a good one, Paul. Piss Christ. Yeah, that's an excellent one.
Piss Christ.
Remember? Piss Christ, yeah.
What is it about Piss Christ?
I never saw it, but it certainly did change things. It was a crucifix, right? A rosary, a large one.
Uh-huh.
Jesus on it, submerged in a jar of urine. called Piss Christ.
You never saw it, but you consider it a mind-altering work of art.
Yeah, actually, there's also Muhammad Christ, Piss Muhammad, which is just an empty jar of urine. You know damn well that's a good joke, Fish. I love that joke. Will that get me killed?
No, I don't know.
I like Piss Muhammad, an empty jar of urine.
That's good.
No one had the courage to do it.
Wow. All right. Let's move on. I think that's probably the best thing for us to do right now. What has been your most memorable or inspirational gig, one you played or attended, and why?
Oh. Well, I remember as I'm going to go way back to high school and going to see a production of The Trojan Women with Martha Henry.
Oh.
That blew my mind. Yeah. Yeah.
What was it about it that blew your mind?
Her performance was just mind-boggling. I'd never seen anyone so alive and so in the moment in my life. I'd never really seen acting like that before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did that
Stratford, I guess grade 10, The Women, yeah.
Okay.
That was a big one. Yeah.
That's fine. That's an answer. That's good. All right.
Yeah, it's an answer.
That's good. What have been your career highs and career lows?
Okay, I'm going to talk about, a career low. What a real career low. What? What boat ride? Oh, yeah. A year ago, I did a cruise in the Mediterranean. I did stand-up on it. An all-gay cruise, that would absolutely be the low point.
Now, why exactly?
Well, no one came to see me.
Oh.
They had to move me into a smaller theater. They eventually canceled my shows. It was a disaster. And gay men, thousands of gay men, none of them came to see me.
Huh.
And yet Kathy Griffin was aboard, and they all flocked to her. And it was a very distressing 10 days. Gay men won't go see other gay men. So it was a very, very sad trip for me.
Why won't gay men go to see other gay men?
It's a hard... that we would be here all day.
Okay, never mind. Yeah, all right.
Self-loathing. They only go see women.
Right.
As a group. Generally, obviously, I'm stereotyping.
Sure.
But yeah, no. I mean, I performed in a theater, like 1,800 seats and maybe 30 people.
Oh, man.
In a boat full of thousands of gay men. Yeah, that was pretty distressing.
All right. That sounds like the low for sure. This was last
that
year?
That was rough.
Last year, you say?
That was rough. And then a high point? I mean, I don't know. I've had a lot of high points. Kids in the Hall. Walk of Fame. I mean, that's not a performance thing. Another great low point was when the Kids in the Hall did Comic Relief and we bombed. That was, oh my Lord, did we bomb.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we bombed a lot. We bombed in Letterman. That was another low point.
Did you guys perform as a troupe on Letterman? I didn't know that.
Yeah, bombed.
Oh, no. I got to find that on YouTube, maybe.
Reg. Yeah, we did Reg. Wrong sketch. We didn't do
okay.
High points. There must be something that I can say that's really...
I don't want to feed you lines here, but you and I spent a lot of time talking about the Larry Sanders Show the other night.
Oh, well, that was wonderful. That would definitely, there was lots of highlights there. Being called a hockey puck by Don Rickles, that was fabulous. Improvising a scene with Katie Lang about Chatelaine Magazine and curling. That was great. Because that's what we had, the scene they'd written for us, and they were all Canadian jokes that we thought were lame. And Katie and I said, let us make this up. We're going to talk about curling. And it worked really, really well. That was fantastic.
Nice.
But, you know, like a high performing point.
It's career, by the way. It's not just performing. It could be anything.
Oh, yeah, career. Oh, career. That was pretty good. I think of a Kid in the Hall thing that was great, the five of us. Winning the Rose of Montreux, actually.
The Rose
which
of Montreux?
It's the International Television Prize, which is given to the best television series in the world. And we won.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, we won it in 1993. Yeah. Number one. Best show, like they call it, the most innovative show on television in the world.
Wow.
That was pretty amazing. That made up for our lack of Geminis.
That's great. All right, that's a good one. All right, let's move on there. What's the meanest thing ever said to you before, during, or after a gig, Scott?
Die, AIDS, faggots, die.
Oh.
Okay.
That's, wow. Who? When was...
What?
Oh.
Lots.
That happened a lot?
No, that actual phrase once. But people said horrible things. So what was the other question?
That was the question. What's the meaning?
Die, AIDS, faggot, die. That's
okay,
a good one.
That's a good one. Yeah. All right. Moving on here. What should everyone shut up about?
Oh, whatever offends them.
You're tired of hearing about people being offended.
People need to stop it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
People, my thing is, people need to stop it. They need to, they just need to. Here's what's worrying me about the age of outrage is that it seems like we're entering, it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. When something really terrible happens, are we ever going to be able to recognize it?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean. Like, how are we going to recognize true, really egregious offenses when we're upset about so many stupid little things? Like the faux outrage over Trevor Noah. What nonsense.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's nonsense.
Right, right. Okay.
So I would just say everything, because I'm at the point now where I can't tell any longer. I refuse to be outraged. Even if someone called me even if they said to me today, die, you AIDS faggot, die, I'd go, oh, well, that's his opinion.
Right.
I would just go, he has a right to his opinion. His opinion that I should get AIDS and die. That's an opinion.
What traits do you most like and most dislike about yourself?
Oh, I hate my temper, number one. That's my worst quality. My best quality, I guess, would be, you can't see things. I have to,
this is your time to shine.
Energy? My energy, maybe.
Your energy?
Yeah.
That's, okay, that's good. What's your idea of a perfect Sunday?
Oh, breakfast in bed, leisurely sex, a pot brownie, and all the newspapers.
All of the newspapers?
All of them, okay. Yeah.
All right.
That's yeah. Right. Like, I could... Today I had a distressing thing. I went to one of my stores where I usually get magazines, and they've stopped selling magazines. She just said it's not worth it.
Oh.
All magazines.
Oh.
All.
Do you think the internet... anyway, we don't have time for this. I think the internet's killing everything, but...
Yeah, it might be.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have a reckoning.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen.
Just because we can do something doesn't mean we should.
Right, right.
I'm a little worried.
I am,
that
too.
That we've taken a wrong turn.
Yeah.
Do you think so?
Well, on some level, yeah. I think on some level, the internet, on a resource level, it could help. Like in the fact that we're not using as much...
Yes,
stuff,
yes.
But at the same time, we're losing, human beings are losing jobs left and right because of the internet.
Yep.
So anyway, this is a whole other conversation. I just think
it is.
It's not good. It's not necessarily good. I embraced it. I use it. I'm not sure
it's
good.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, me sure. Me too.
All right. What advice should you have taken but did not?
Smoking.
You should have started smoking?
I should never have started smoking.
Oh, no. Wait a minute.
Should never have had a cigarette. Yeah.
When did you
stop? When I was young.
When did you stop?
Oh, like 10 years ago. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So that's something, that's definitely a regret.
Okay. What would make you kick someone out of your band, or in this case, comedy troupe, and or bed, and have you?
I've never kicked anyone out of a group or a band, no.
Mm-hmm.
I've never kicked anyone out of bed. If someone is willing to have sex with me, I'm not going to kick them out of bed. I usually try to be a good sport and finish it off.
You say you have a temper. Surely,
I do.
Surely someone has done something so egregious that you've lost your temper.
Yes. Yeah, and I just don't know if I'm willing to talk about it.
Okay.
Because I can't really remember. I'm thinking about it. Yeah, I've thrown people. I mean, I've definitely stopped, I guess. Well, breath. Bad breath is a deal breaker.
In any context.
Yeah, and also people that refuse to cut their toenails.
What do you mean refuse? Who's refusing to cut their toenails?
I don't know. If you don't cut them, then you're refusing. I think that it's like some sort of, what are they, like resistors or something? Like they're pacifists? I don't understand. How can anyone look down and go, oh, yeah, it's all right for my toenail to extend half an inch? How can that be? That's a decision. That's just not laziness.
I think that's worth kicking someone out of your band or band. Yeah, that makes sense.
Both, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Especially a barefoot band. You can't have that in a barefoot band. See, I have a foot fetish, so that would be huge for me. No, that can't. That won't stand.
What do you think of when you think of Canada?
Oh, lakes and compromise. There we go.
Lakes and compromise. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. What was the first LP, cassette, CD, or 8-track that you ever bought with your own money?
Oh, Alice Cooper, Killer.
Killer?
Yeah.
Interesting. What? why was that?
I don't know. I liked Alice Cooper. I'd never had an album before, and I think there was it was a scary cover. I think there was a snake on it.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know. It was either that or Cat Stevens, Catch Bullet 4.
Very different.
Very different. But those are the, honestly, as a kid, we were not a music family. We weren't allowed to listen to music, really.
Yeah.
And so none of us, we didn't have records and stuff. But I did, in my entire, all through high school, I only had two records, and they were, Catch Bullet 4 and Killer.
And these were vinyl records?
Yeah.
Do you remember where you got them?
Some store in Brampton. I never was a huge music guy. I never collected.
Right.
And we had a stereo that was only used for 2 to 3 hours on Sunday afternoon. And my father would listen to classical music.
Oh, okay.
Or musicals. We'd listen to, I guess the other album I own three albums. The third album was the soundtrack to Mary Poppins.
That's quite eclectic. I think
that is eclectic, yeah.
Yeah, that's not bad. All right. What was your most memorable day job?
I had so many. Many times, I mean, being a cleaner, that's not very memorable. I was a bingo caller. That was pretty memorable. I was one of those rickshaw drivers. That was an interesting one.
Like when you were in Dundelli or something?
No, in Toronto, they used to have rickshaw drivers here. You don't remember?
They still have them. Yeah, I remember it.
They still have them, don't they?
Yeah.
And I only lasted one day, and because my second day, I hit a car with the rickshaw, and the guy got out and yelled at me, and I realized I damaged the car.
Oh.
So I just dropped the rickshaw and ran away and never answered my phone for the next 3 days. I abandoned the rickshaw and just never went back to work.
Wow. That's hard work, isn't it? Those rickshaws, they look like they
It was very hard. You're an animal. You're a draft animal. You got to be strong for those.
Maybe
it's a good workout, I'll tell you.
Seeds of the Hollow Planet right there, maybe.
Yeah, I just felt it was just demeaning.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems demeaning to me. All right, that's a good one. How do you spoil yourself, Scott?
I don't spoil myself near enough. Clothes. I love clothes.
You just buy clothes?
Shoes. Yeah.
How many pairs of shoes do you have?
Not that many. 16.
16 pairs of shoes?
Is that a lot?
Well, I don't know. Actually, what is that? Is that everything? Is that a running shoe? Is that a dress
shoe?
See,
it's not that many. It's not that many, really, is it?
No. If it's everything, then that's fine. I thought you just meant like 16 regular like sneaker shoe.
No, like I only have a couple of running shoes. I guess I would spell myself travel. I do a lot of exotic travel. That would be it.
Oh yeah, have you been to anywhere?
Everywhere, but I don't do it like I don't go to like 4-star or 5-star hotels or whatever. I like to go to poor countries, like developing countries.
Yeah,
I find that very interesting. I think it's because when I was a teenager, I lived in the Philippines for a year.
Oh.
As an exchange program, and it changed my life. So the last big trip I did was Nicaragua. Before that, it was Tanzania, and before that, it was Egypt.
Oh, okay.
So I just like to go. I don't really do a lot of planning. I just go and plop myself down and figure it out when I'm there.
You go by yourself primarily?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, wow.
By myself.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's the only way to meet people.
Yeah.
You know, it's lonely and it can be very difficult. And those first few days are very rough.
Right.
But it forces you out of your shell. You have to talk to people.
Right. Right.
Or you go crazy.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. All right. If I wasn't acting or performing comedy, I would be blank.
Writing science fiction.
Writing science fiction. All right. That makes sense. We've established that. What do you fear most?
Snakes and heights.
So like a snake, if you were like a really tall snake would be the worst for you.
No, I don't mind a tall snake, but I wouldn't want to have a snake dropped on me from a cliff, or I wouldn't want to jump off a cliff and land on a snake. Or if I was fell off a cliff and I was dangling, you know, from a root, and someone like extended a snake to help grab onto, I'd probably just let go and fall.
Right. Okay.
I'd rather die than be rescued by a snake.
Okay. That's fair. Now we're in the home stretch here, Scott. There's only a few more.
Okay.
Thank you for your patience and your candor. Here's one. What makes you want to take it off and get it on?
You mean what makes me horny?
I guess.
Don't you mean?
I guess so.
That is what you're asking.
It's not a person. I didn't come up with this question, first of all. I'm not trying to be untoward. It's question 19 on the questionnaire.
Lots of things. I mean, you know, I don't know. That's a hard one. I don't.
There was lots of things, and then it got hard.
Lots of things. I mean, I don't know. Let me think. I can't. I don't know. I don't know. It's weird.
It's a weird question.
It's a weird question. I mean, it's, you know, it's.
I believe when I asked Weird Al Yankovic this question, he said a hat.
A hat?
Something
that's
about,
a good question.
Something
that's
about
a
hat, going into a house and taking a hat off and putting it back on. I don't know. He just made it funny because he's Weird Al. But anyway, no, I don't know. It's a difficult question, but if you can think of anything without divulging too much personal information. If not, you can also pass. I feel badly that so late in the game I gave you the option to pass on any one of these questions.
Yeah, I mean, just to actually be honest about this is, I don't know, what I want.
You're a famous person. Someone could.
Okay, I'll just say like hairy chest. Just say that hairy chest.
A hairy chest, okay.
Hairy guys. I love hairy men.
Really? Because it seems like in the age of man... Are we in the age of...
No, it's over.
Manscaping?
That's over.
That's all done?
Manscaping's done. It's done.
Okay. We're back to...
No, no one's doing that anymore.
Okay.
Maybe straight people are still. but gay people aren't.
Gay people are not into that anymore.
The young ones, no. The young ones are letting it all grow.
And you like that?
I do.
Okay.
I'm glad. I love beards. Okay, that's what really turns me on, a beard. This is why I really love the hipster era. I love it. Because beards make me crazy.
Like a big beard or just any kind?
Yeah, even a big beard, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Good to
know. I mean, not a ZZ Top beard, but yeah. Like, here's what makes me crazy. A really thick, luxurious black beard. That makes me nuts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Especially if the guy's bald. Like a bald guy with a black beard. Like a bald black guy with a beard. That's Okay, you've teased it out of me.
I knew if I was persistent, I would get it out of you. All right.
Yeah, that's definitely.
I think you've said enough. That's fine. What has been your strangest celebrity encounter? Now, in this scenario, you might be the celebrity, or maybe the other person is.
Well, let's see. Going to see a UFC fight with Lawrence Fishburne certainly is up there. That was definitely one of my great celebrity evenings. I was there for all the wrong reasons. and he knew.
How did this pairing come about? He asked me
to go. So I'm like, what, Lawrence Fishburne asked you to go see a UFC championship fight? You go. And you sit in the front row. My God, I was so close I could smell them. It was crazy. There was like a splash guard for me. Yeah, it was
all right.
It was an evening I'll never forget.
This was in Vegas or something?
No, Toronto.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. Yeah, the best part about this story is at the end of the evening, you know, I'm there with Lawrence. At the very end of the evening, they put up Lawrence and me on the Jumbotron.
Mm-hmm.
And underneath Lawrence, it says Lawrence, you know, Matrix star, Lawrence Fishburne. And then underneath me, nothing. Nothing. As if I was just his, you know, unidentified companion in my own town. That's pretty humiliating.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's nothing.
Just, it's not fair. It's just not fair.
No, Canada. Like, really? Nothing?
Yeah, that's not good. All right. Who would be your ideal dinner guest, living or dead, and what would you serve them?
Jesus, and I would serve him God, what would he want? Shake and bake. Yeah, shake and
shake,
bake.
You think Jesus
He'd
is,
love it.
He's a shake and bake guy.
He's a shake and bake kind of guy. Okay. I know Jesus, but that would be a pretty interesting character to meet, you know.
Totally. And
I'd love to have a dinner with all the you know, with Buddha, Muhammad, Jesus, you know, Krishna. I'd love to have all the gods. That would be great, gods and yeah. I find religion fascinating,
yeah.
And I really think it's sad that kids don't learn religion anymore. They don't have to be taught. You know, you have to know about religion.
Why is that?
Right?
Why?
Because you have to. Because all of our art is based on it. So much you need to know about archetypes.
Well, so is a lot of our conflict is based on that.
Yeah, but I'm not saying this is what I think they threw the baby out with the bathwater in terms of religion in schools. I'm not saying you teach religion like an official religion, mm-hmm. but kids need to know the stories of religion,
right?
Because you need to know those biblical stories, those stories from the sacred texts, because they're reflected in books and movies and songs. And do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's the basis of our culture and our archetypes, and you need to know those archetypes. And that worries me that in our urge to be secular and to move away from religion, we're going to throw out stuff that we need.
I think that's a valid point.
I think they need to start teaching religion in school again. Not actually saying this is a Christian world, but you need to know those stories.
It's yeah, I think that's a controversial perspective on some level.
Is it? These are archetypes that have been around for thousands of years. We need to know. People need to know that Buddha abandoned his family. They need to, right? They need to know that Jesus fed the multitudes with, you know, loaf of bread, fishes. Well, these are just stories, but they're important.
I think you're right. I think that on some level that it is still the foundation for which we are divided. And I think that...
Yeah! Like, I wish I knew the story of Muhammad.
Yeah.
I wish I knew what happened in Medina. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wish I knew these stories. We should know them, especially in the pluralistic society that we live in. I think it would be very good for Christians to know Hindu myths and Buddhist myths. You know what I mean?
You're right.
And vice versa. I really do. It's not saying that anyone's bad, but you need to know that. Like if you're talking about a book and you say, well, of course, you see this is, or a painting, this is reminiscent of Mary and the, you know, the Mother Virgin Mary holding Jesus, the baby. Well, what's that? Well, you know, they're referencing a certain thing, or this is referencing the Barabbas, the thief beside Jesus. If people don't know those stories, how can they How can they, you know, analyze things? It's critical thinking. We can't. It's part of critical thinking.
You're absolutely right, and you've turned my head around.
Because you were against it, weren't you? Well, how were you raised, Fish? What's your religion?
My parents are Hindu. I rejected almost all religion because, as I say, I mostly see it as a way of dividing us, and I reject difference or the perpetuation of. I know that we're distinct from one another, but I do also think we're fundamentally all the same. And
I agree with that.
If you go with that. I mean, seriously, I think every conflict is really based in this.
If you do believe that, seriously believe that, then there's no harm in talking about the differences.
You're right. That's what I'm saying. This is where you flip my perspective on it. All right.
And to pretend that there aren't differences is disingenuous.
You're right. I try not to give credence to things that I think are muddying up the way we communicate with each other. But I think that you're right. Actually, if we all knew it cold, we would be able to communicate more clearly.
I think so.
You're right. Okay. Two more questions.
Okay.
What does your mom wish you were doing instead?
Oh, she wishes I was a lawyer.
A lawyer?
Mm-hmm.
Just for the... Why?
She just wanted me to be a lawyer.
Because of your arguing ability or because of the prestige?
She thought I spoke well, and that was it. She always thought that I was good in debates and stuff. She thought I'd be a lawyer.
Okay. That's fair. Finally... What song would you like to have played at your funeral?
How about Macy Gray's Try?
Macy Gray's Try. You're a fan of this song, or you like the message?
Huge. Huge. Yeah, it's all about never giving up.
But you would be dead.
Yeah, but not really.
What?
Dead isn't dead.
Okay. So you feel like this would be an inspiring way for you to persevere?
To go to the next level.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, Macy Gray's, what was it, Try?
I think it's called Try, yeah.
Is that one of the big singles she had?
It's the biggest single she ever had.
Right. I know that one. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Scott, thank you so much for
thank you.
Taking part in this questionnaire. I know we went a little over time, but... I don't know. What were we supposed to talk for? I have no idea.
It doesn't matter.
But I do appreciate it, and, I hope we'll talk soon. Good luck with the kids in the hall stuff.
Okay, thanks, Vish.
Okay, we'll talk soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, thanks again for checking out Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can email me about the show at creativecontrol933@gmail.com. That's creative with a K, control with a K, 933@gmail.com. You can also follow our Twitter at Vish Creative, VishKreative. And you can also like our Facebook page. A version of this show airs on CFRU in Guelph every Wednesday at noon Eastern. And you can listen to that online at cfru.ca, or if you're in the KW region, at 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also sign up for the weekly mailing list for the podcast and the show at vishkhanna.com, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I believe that is everything I wanted to tell you. Thank you once again.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.